supervisors will reconvene. We're going to, we are going to be juggling some of these agenda items for some people that are having traffic difficulty getting here, so bear with me. It's not going to be in the order that you see. So just follow with me. Is that all right?
And yes.
If not, it's okay. So let's go to 7A. Should not be a long one. Let's take it to airport.
Good morning, Joy Hall, Director of General Services, here to give my weekly update on airports. We are in our seventh week of air construction at the Weed Airport. In the last couple of weeks, they have been doing some compaction and QA testing, and they continue to lay the conduit out there. They also have started to lay the grindings in anticipation for the first leg of asphalt today. Siskiyou County Airport, renovations on the bathroom are continuing, and we have done some weed abatement out there in expectation of weed spraying next week. And as far as the Happy Camp Airport, we will meet on the 30th to go over the starting of the abatement plan or to talk about it. That's all I have for you today.
So one of the things, and I think I've emailed you a little bit about Weed Airport, the hangars that will be getting conduit for potential electricity future. I think it's just the east side hangars, I'll call it.
Yeah.
But what is the
hangar? There is conduit that's going to be coming behind the backside of the larger hangars that they'll be able to hook
so
up
if
to.
If I'm at the FBO looking north, basically, you've got east side and west side, okay?
Uh-huh.
So west side, will they have the ability for future electric or not?
Yes.
So all of the hangars will have that capability?
Mm-hmm. Not the T hangars. Not the T hangers, just the large ones right now. Because it'll be coming either where the wind sock is.
Yes.
It'll be coming up from there and then going, there's a little taxiway there. It's going to be coming back across that way over. So, according to my conduit map, it'll be for the back side and that front side right there, but not the T hangers.
Help me. T hangers are which ones?
They're the green ones. They're the ones more north. So the south ones.
So where it crosses, that's the limitation.
Yes,
those
yes.
out will not have these south will.
Correct.
Potentially.
Yes.
Very helpful. Thank you.
You're
all right. Now I got it. The map. I wasn't sure what you were telling me.
Sorry.
All right. Thank you. Any questions from Gore? And I know we're moving on the Weed Airport. We're moving along fairly quickly. Yes.
Yes.
Great.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
Good.
Any public comment? Anybody online? I want to make sure in case there are anybody in house.
Showing them online.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Let's go on to let's do 7C. I think I have a public comment on that one, so let's do that one. 7C is county administration with regard to the emergency.
Good morning, board members. Elizabeth Nielsen, Deputy County Administrator. On March 26th, the Board of Supervisors approved a resolution proclaiming a local state of emergency for impacts resulting from the Klamath Dam removal activities, specifically impacts resulting from water quality and potential air quality impacts. The intent and purpose of this proclamation is to document impacts resulting from dam removal and to urge the state of California to assist the county by performing regular water quality and air quality testing and monitoring. The proclamation also creates a distinctive and definitive record of water and air quality concerns, requests made by the county, and response by the state. The board takes very seriously protecting its citizens and those who recreate in Siskiyou County, and we are exploring every opportunity to ensure this. On April 12th, following a commitment from the Klamath River Renewal Corporation to perform one round of water quality testing on the Klamath River, the county received a statement of procedures for this testing. On May 1st, county staff from the Environmental Health Department were present with KRRC's contractors during the water sampling on the Klamath River. The samples were taken at the same locations as the county's sampling earlier this year and for the same constituents as the county's testing, which includes a range of heavy metals. In addition, and in response to community concerns, water samples were also taken near the Copco Bridge above Copco Dam and immediately below Iron Gate at the boat ramp. Although I had hoped to have those results by today's meetings, we are 1 to 2 weeks out from the water quality report and analysis. We will be sure to post the results and the analysis to our website and distribute these documents once they are available. We are going to continue to ask the state to perform regular water quality testing, as KRRC had only committed to one round of testing, and the board's direction still stands to the county to perform quarterly water quality testing. In late April, the county's Air Pollution Control District received 2 EBAM Plus air monitors from the California Air Resources Board, or CARB. 1 EBAM was deployed within the project area last week, and the second will be deployed this week. The EBAMs were not equipped with modems, meaning that the Air Pollution Control District staff is required to manually go out and pull this data and then report this data. Modems allow them to secure the data on a routine basis without having to go out to the site. We are continuing to work with state representatives and through the assembly member and senator's offices to try and secure monitors, as this does, it's more preferable to have modems out there. In addition, the purple air monitors that were deployed in March are still in operation. The public can go to purpleair.com, use the drop down arrow for a map in the header of the website, and click on real-time map to view the monitors. This morning, each purple air monitor reported a reading between 0 and 50, which is satisfactory, meaning that air quality poses little or no risk within 24 hours of exposure. I would like to thank our Air Pollution Control District staff for deploying the EBAM pluses out on site, and I would also like to thank our environmental health staff who went out on site to be present during the water quality testing performed by KRRC's contractors. Lastly, I'd like to report that at the board's direction, Rick Dean with Community Development has reached out to our local cooperative extension office to see if there's funding available to perform testing on livestock, and the extension office is pursuing that funding, although we don't have a guarantee for that funding at this time. With that, the direction in front of the board today is to approve or extend the proclamation with direction for the clerk to bring it back every 60 days. And I'm open to any questions from the board.
Thank you. Board, comments, questions? Well, before I go there, I'm sorry. Mr. Leach, you have a public comment on this one. And I apologize, I had you down for 6B on the FEMA. Did you still want to make a public comment on that one or not?
I talked to the FEMA guy.
Okay.
On the Klamath River. And
okay. Okay, so do you want to come up for this one? Again, I apologize, I missed that one. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is James Leach. I live on the Klamath River, below the Collie Rest Area. While monitoring the water quality is all great, I don't know why we haven't had any sludge testing done. The sludge is all over the bottom of the river. My sludge report indicates a lot of heavy metals that are not in the water column. The heavy metals are attached to the sludge. and the sludge settles out, the heavy metals come down with it. The problem we have now is all the sediment from Copco 1 is now behind Iron Gate Dam. When they get down to the bottom, there's a coffer dam that was used to divert water into the tunnel. When they destroy all that coffer dam and put the river back, all the sediment that came from Copco 1 and Iron Gate is going to come down the path here. They don't have enough water to flush it out. So it's going to settle in probably the first 5 or 10 miles. I personally feel that you should push to have testing done before we remove the coffer dam to find out if there's really hot spots back there or not. When the sludge gets to my house, I would estimate it diluted by at least tenfold, maybe more, because it's spread out down the whole river. If there's a huge pocket up there behind Iron Gate Dam, we're not going to know about it because they're just going to flush it out and let it go. But if we don't get testing done before they do that, you better believe I'm going to be there testing it when it comes out the other end of the dam. Because I think that's too late. Because in the estimated 100-year floodplain, my property will be flooded with 4 feet of water, 3 feet in my house. And during that first 100-year flood, that's when all that sediment's going to come down on us. And it's going to be deposited everywhere there's a slow spot. Anywhere in that 100-year floodplain, which includes Highway 96. They proposed that Highway 96 is going to go underwater by the Swallows and by our house. And I know they never told you that when they proposed it. But that's where I'm at. So thank you very much.
Thank you. So, Ms. Nielsen, you're recommending the extension of this, correct?
Correct.
But the other thing I want to know, I thought somebody was testing the sludge or the sediment part of this. Am I incorrect in that?
I'm not aware that sludge at the bottom of the river has been tested. I believe it's only been Klamath River water testing and confirmed by Mr. Dean.
And should that be something that we push up the ladder?
We can certainly, I will certainly push that at
it
the state
like
level.
It sounds like it. Okay.
I will certainly push
okay.
that.
So to that point, I believe that they did do core sampling before the project.
Yeah.
So there was sampling done.
Correct. So KRRC did perform core testing prior to any dam removal activities. As far as any sludge testing in the river or during these activities, the county hasn't performed
right.
any. I'm
right.
not aware that KRRC has, but we will push that.
I think that's something you can look back to see what they did the lead up to. There was, I know there was
yeah.
specifically was core testing done.
Correct.
But I think Mr. Leek brings up a valid point.
Oh, yeah. No,
it would be, you know, to test what's there before it's released, not unlike what we did with, you know, water quality was a problem after the fact. This could be something that could be proactive. So
correct.
Okay. Anyone else? Then I'm looking for action to extend.
So moved to extend.
Second. Was there an addition to your request to extend?
There's, yes, to extend and direct the clerk to bring back the proclamation every 60 days.
Can I have a follow-up question?
Sure, go ahead.
So, Ms. Nielsen?
Yes.
So we do not have any follow-up water testing from when we first did.
We have the results from our February testing, the testing that was performed in early May. We do not have
the
results.
That's the one I'm specific.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Supervisor Valenzuela?
No.
Excuse me. Supervisor Chris?
I'll be an aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopseff?
Aye.
CSAC is all here?
Yes.
I hear? Is that right?
Yes.
Can we'll go on mm-hmm. with the CSAC? Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, make morning. It quick, you're late.
You're early.
From my side.
He knows my role too.
For the first time in my life, I abided by the speed limit. Good morning to you all. I'm Grant Panasso. I'm the CEO of the California State Association of Counties, and I'm delighted to be in your board chambers, which I think actually is my first time, notwithstanding being in your county many times. I'm going to spend a few moments talking about who we are as an organization, what we are working on your behalf, and then we will celebrate Supervisor Reynolds Wela in terms of the work that he has done on behalf of himself, our organization, and your community. CSAC has been around for a very, very long time, 130 years. And in all of that time, our job has remained basically the same, which is to support supervisors in lifting up their communities, and however you define that. And so that is functionally about ensuring that every community has the resources, the authority, and the flexibility to do things in a way that makes sense to them. And that is different in Siskiyou than it is in Merced, than it is in San Diego, and that is exactly as it should be. Your communities are different. Your resources are different. The things that you want to focus on are also not the same, and we celebrate that and want to ensure that you are equipped with the tools to be able to most successfully meet the needs of your community. That's our core. And we've been doing that over the past several weeks related to the legislature and the governor's initial proposed budget and the revision, which just came out, focusing on a few core issues. One, broadband, ensuring that connectivity happens in every community in California. There's both a state-level issue related to this. We were the lead in, along with a number of other partners, in getting the largest investment in the country towards broadband just a couple of years ago. Some of that is being walked back in the May revision, and we don't want that to occur. We want to ensure the communities can be connected, because that is core to economic mobility. It's core to education. It's core to participating in the 21st century economy and healthcare system. We want to make sure that is in place in every community of the state per the priorities adopted by our board, which Supervisor Reynolds Wela sits on. So that's core. There's a federal piece to that as well that we continue to work on related to the Affordable Connectivity Program and ensuring that Congress extends funding for that, as it is critical for areas that have now gotten broadband into the community, but where it's not affordable, where you only have one option. So I want to make sure that gets resolved. Homelessness, we continue to work on. We have the most comprehensive plan in the country to address homelessness, which is about ensuring state-level responsibility, county-level responsibility, and city-level responsibility. All are necessary, but ultimately, if we're not all working together, then we are all not moving in the most expeditious manner forward in terms of making progress. So that is there. Public lands and protecting them as much as possible. Your county is one of a number that has made investment in the National Center on Public Lands, which is about ensuring that those counties that are heavily dependent on payment in lieu of taxes or secure rural schools, both significant revenue sources to this county, that those dollars are first protected and second, fully recognize what the impacts are to your communities, which they currently do not. And so you probably get 10 cents on the dollar what the impacts are of publicly owned lands in your community, and we want to ensure that at the congressional level that has changed and you have full mitigation for the impacts that are happening in this beautiful county where many, many folks come. There are impacts as they spend time on the public lands, and those mitigations should be addressed. As a kid that grew up in Humboldt, not too far away, protected rural lands is core to who I am. That's what I did when I was a kid, is run around in those areas and want to make sure that those are protected in this current role. Insurance and non-renewal is a growing problem, certainly here, but also in other parts of the state, and that is something that we want to ensure it gets appropriately addressed. It is creating substantial impacts in your community. You're all heavily involved in that issue, and we want to continue to ensure that there are options for your community so that those who choose to live in Siskiyou have an opportunity to have appropriate insurance in covering their homes. We continue connected to that. We continue to work on resiliency-related issues. Wildfire-related protection, ensuring that there is appropriate management of the forest, which often has not been the case, and also that there's investments related to vegetation management and other things to ensure that your community is as protected as possible. So those are the core advocacy-related issues that we continue to work on. It's true that there's a horrible state budget deficit, and it's also true that the budget is a reflection of values. And it's also true that if the things that I just articulated are at the top of the list, which they are at the state level as well, then there's certainly funding for that. There may not be funding for all other things, but there's certainly funding for those things that are considered most important. And the items that I just referenced have continued to be referenced at the state level in terms of their priorities. So we want to ensure that occurs, and also that counties are not left holding the bag and addressing and being the solution to what are state budget-related issues. And so folks will hear a lot about this term admin and admin costs, and we should just trim admin costs. And in the case of counties, which are the primary service provider for the state for primarily mandated health and human services programs, administration equals county employees and partners delivering services to your community. And so admin is child welfare and protecting families. Admin is ensuring that those who are eligible for programs in your community actually receive what they're eligible for. And without admin, there's no program. So we want to make sure that that is protected as part of core services in this particular state budget. Beyond that work, CSAC has a robust California Counties Foundation, and that foundation has both our CSAC Institute, which continues to be the national model for county leadership and policy development, and thanks to Supervisor Valenzuela, who has been on that board on multiple occasions for his efforts and stewardship in there. He also is a past president of CSAC as an organization, and one of the things that he was the primary leader in creating was our CSAC Grants Initiative. And the Grants Initiative comes from the reality that in many rural communities there is not the capacity to apply for federal dollars and state dollars, but largely federal dollars, particularly in this environment where there have been more federal dollars available in recent years for infrastructure, for broadband that I referenced, for transportation, and a whole host of other things that are relevant to your community. And they all require having some capacity to write and submit a grant that is competitive against other local governments across the country. And so the Grants Initiative was specifically designed to create that capacity, to partner with counties that may not have the in-house capacity to attract those dollars and to bring those dollars down to your communities. And so there are half a dozen counties that are participating in it already. Imperial was the first out of the gate, and that is hopefully will turn into a great return on investment for counties that don't have the internal capacity, but where your needs in your community are probably far greater than they are in other places And we want to assist with scale and with ensuring that those competitive dollars come to your community when they are out there. So that's a particularly important thing. On the whole, when we think about who we are as an organization and what we do on your behalf, I want to thank this board because in my role, I have the opportunity to work for all 296 supervisors in California. And so the four of you and Supervisor Help are my bosses, along with 291 other supervisors in the other counties. And CSAC is proud to be able to have that connection with folks because it makes us stronger as an organization. An organization whose board is primarily rural, and we have an executive committee that leans more urban, but our board is very rural, and that is by design. It's by design because notwithstanding where the population centers are in California, every county should have the same voice on our board informing what priorities we are pursuing on your behalf and how we are telling your story. And so we will continue to do that, and always open to any dialogue that the board may wish to have. But perhaps I'll pause. I'll even take a breath. And I'll see if the board has any questions or comments about those items before transitioning over to the credential presentation.
Supervisor Chris, anything?
No, I appreciate everything the CSAC's done and your work for all of our counties and our supervisors. I have no questions specifically.
Same. I enjoy every time I go to a CSAC meeting. It's always very informative, and I really appreciate all the work that you're doing for the counties and how you represent us and how you hear us.
Great.
Thank you for being here today, and thank you for the great work that you do and even partnering with ACRC. We did get news at Golden State Connect that the funding for broadband is zero at this point from the 170 million. So, help. Supervisor Bounce.
No, I would say that, first of all, Supervisor Chris is the alternate to CSAC, and that spot's going to come available here, so keep that in mind.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I think, like anything, you get more involved, and the more you get out of it. So, thank you for coming up all this way. Certainly appreciative.
As a multi-time treasurer to our organization and as a past president, we've spent a lot of time together ensuring that there is fiscal stability for the organization and that we're appropriately representing rural and other communities in California. So really appreciate Supervisor Valenzuela's his long-standing leadership with us as an organization. Supervisor Kopseth, to your comment relative to broadband, there are two areas that are problematic that are reduced substantially in the new revision. One is the loan loss reserve, and that the work of RCRC is most directly connected to that. The other portion is the bigger pool of dollars related to ensuring that there's a middle mile that is put in California, which will increase competition and is necessary in most rural areas that are not currently connected. Because there's no highway to then have a last mile off-ramp into a community to provide that connectivity. And there are substantial slowdowns in that project based upon what is being proposed, which, of course, we oppose and will work dutifully as best we can using all of our leverage to try to help guide the governor and the legislature to a better place, which is to not go back on investments to broadband, which are so paramount in so many communities in California. So we
appreciate you. Thank you.
Work on that. Absolutely.
Sure. Supervisor Chris.
So as we get up here, we're always respecting time, so it's moving along, but you drove a long ways up here. What service I want to bring up to you, of course, is the North Coast Resource Partnership is working on it. James Gore, being on there, are the cannabis cleanups. Trying to obtain funding from the state, massive illegal cannabis grows throughout the state. long-term impacts on the environment. And of course, we've done everything we can, but now for the cleanup, the city's been very limited on funding for properties that we could use to rebuild that property and reduce environmental disasters.
Thank you for raising that issue. It's a significant one. It's on our radar, a significant one all up and down the state. And surprisingly, it is a problem in many urban areas as well.
Yeah.
Clearly present in a number of rural areas, particularly in the northern part of the state, where there are a lot of grows and a belief that Prop 64 made everything okay. And that actually is not what the law, how it's structured, and so ensuring that there is compliance is important, and that what is occurring in your community aligns with your community's wishes on this topic.
Thank you.
You got it. So, Paul?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I sit, in addition to being the CEO of CSAC, I sit as the CEO of our California Counties Foundation. Our chief operating officer is Mr. Paul Danchek. So he is running our foundation, and that includes three different elements. One, we are doing some direct work with the California Emerging Technology Fund around broadband, so we are working in partnership with them. Second, the grants initiative that I referenced is housed in our foundation as our 501c3. And then third, the CSAC Institute that I referenced. And that institute has been in... there have been campuses, there's currently a campus over in the Humboldt area. There have been a campus in the Shasta, Tehama area previously. One of the most important things for me when I first came to CSAC was to get a satellite campus up in the northern part of the state and to keep one here. It moves from place to place to meet county needs, but we've been able to maintain that for the past 8 years, which is terrific. And so that provides opportunity for the leadership and policy development, beginning at the supervisor level and moving all through your organization. And it really is a partnership to ensure that if you don't have the full, robust policy and leadership development within your county, that we can come and bring it to you. And to assist your team in terms of their growth. And that is exactly what Supervisor Valenzuela has availed himself of doing. And that makes us better as an organization. It provides return to this board and to your community as well. And it broadens your network of influence, which is very relevant for this county and for many other smaller counties in the state. And so we would like to honor Supervisor Valenzuela for completing his CSAC Institute Supervisor credential, which he has done recently. And Paul has super goodies that he can share, including the framed certificate recognizing the leadership of Supervisor Valenzuela and the benefits back to this county and to your community. So Supervisor Valenzuela, congratulations.
Thank you so much. I would like to say that Supervisor Chris has also gone through the program. I mean, something I've always encouraged. We have some staff members that have taken some CSAC classes, including So You Want to Be a CAO, if I recall. Just really grateful. I just did complete this class Friday. So the timing is really good. So it won't be forgettable. Okay, give me my thing.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Get over here, Grant.
Thank you. That's
no problem.
And then can we get one with the rest of the board in addition?
Hey, so I would like to say something. You know, one of the things that I learned, it was a learning lesson. I was present, I think, Jose Hernandez. Do you remember Jose Hernandez, the astronaut?
I do.
And so there's a learning lesson. It took 11 times to apply to become an astronaut. And one of the things I learned is that, you know, everyone meets the minimum standards. So this was my way of stepping up
I know we had some staff members that have taken some classes, so I would encourage everyone to go beyond the minimum standard and try to improve yourself. So.
As I like to say, act like you like each other.
There's no cooties.
Great, thank you.
Awesome.
All right, congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Can
the check
in
the mail for him?
We go way back.
Same, thank you. Same. Okay.
Well, I hope we got you out of here early enough to get back timely.
Raise the voice.
Thank you guys for coming all the way up.
All right, we're going to move. I'm going to switch up here a little bit. I'm going to go to 12A, county clerk, with regard to appointment for a tenant, sort of community service district.
All right, give me just a sec to find a spot here. A continued item from a couple of meetings back. It's an appointment of one member to the unscheduled vacancy on the Tenant Community Services District. This is for a short term ending December 4, 2026, and it was due to a resignation of Rick Mace, and one member is needed in order to establish a quorum for the district. That's all we're able, the board is able to appoint at this point. I did receive two different letters of interest. First was from Stephen Adams, and then also a gentleman, Larry Lourdes, who's previously been on the tenant board, and he's provided his information, and I've checked. He is an active registered voter and lives within the district, and I had checked on Mr. Adams as well, who is also eligible. So it's up to the board if you want to decide on somebody today.
Also, I see some people here from Tenet. I wanted to share some good news with you. I was going to share it at the CSB meeting. I had it typed up as an email, so excuse me, I'm going to read it off here so I get the facts right. Wanted to share some good news with the Tenet residents. Long story short, Tenet Road will start the rebuilding process in 2025. The project will start with survey work and redesign of the road surface. The county knows that for years you've advocated for Tenet Road to be repaired, and the county has pursued outside grant funding, which we have all these years to try to fund it. Those haven't worked out, unfortunately, but we do have Senate Bill 1 funding that we'll be using. So Tenet Road will be beginning in 2025. So I want to share that news with you guys. Usually we don't have a large crowd for Tenet here. This is for Tenet. This is a large crowd. So that's some good news for the Tenet folks up there. I was going to send an email out, but I had to read off it, so I got the exact facts and figures right. For appointment, I'll nominate a gentleman named Larry Lourdes.
Second.
All righty. And I do have Mr. Lourdes' letter here if anybody wants to see copies, but I believe I had forwarded it to the board as well.
Yeah.
Okay,
Supervisor Valenzuela.
Yep.
Supervisor Chris.
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren.
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopczak.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we're going to move on to item 7B, community development. Good morning, Mr. Dean. Tee this up so that we can be expedient in where you want to go with it.
Copy that.
Chairman,
Rick Dean, Community Development Director. In the format of expediency, community development is approached by the board of supervisors to take a look at opportunities potentially for small-scale campgrounds, essentially, for recreational purposes for our county, and also for Leisure TOT perhaps. So that said, staff looked into that. I was going to come to the board and basically present some options. Some problematic issues we had are with temporary structures, right? So typically camping is a temporary structure that you're in. With that in building code, at the end of 6 months, it has to come down, basically, so it's no longer there. It becomes a permanent structure. All that to say, with our endeavor, staff realized that there's a Senate Bill 620 that is before California. It's currently in Gulf right now. Moving forward, seems to be. And it addresses that very thing. So, as you know, we have campgrounds specific to highway commercial zoning allowable here, and that's all regulated by HCD, Housing and Community Development. With the small-scale camping that's being proposed, it allows for what they term nine sleeping accommodations, temporary sleeping accommodations, but it puts it in the hands of the local to regulate on the county and takes it out of the HCD. So essentially, vision small campgrounds. So I guess at this point in time, direction from the board, we can wait to see if this legislation actually passes through California, which we would be, it becomes state law, we have to embrace it. Or we can get ahead of the curve, so to speak, and develop our own ordinance with that. One thing I have, if I can be so bold, because there's a lot of things as far as what type of zoning we could go into, whether or not should be occupied by single family dwelling, etc. So I have a little bit of homework. I'll just pass out.
Okay,
that was good. Get some feedback.
So bottom line here is, I guess I'll wait to get back to the podium. Do you have availability to kind of be ahead of the curve on this, potentially, if we decide to give you that direction before it passes or not?
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, we're working on the general plan. Staff has got a lot going on. Okay. But
this wouldn't be a huge dump on you to say, gosh, we don't have time?
Yeah, no, we would plug it in with our workflow. And as a land use ordinance, it would have to go before the Planning Commission prior to coming to it.
Right. And if this should pass, can we, I'll call it, customize it to our needs specifically versus just embracing the whole program? Does it have that flexibility?
Yes, there's some built-in flexibility there, specifically on sewage disposal, water supply, that type of thing.
Okay.
Tailored to local ordinances.
Okay.
And just generally speaking, whenever legislation comes through, the local entity can make it more restrictive.
Okay.
Just not less restrictive.
And what you need from us today is basically just direction with regard to, in preparation of this potentially passing, starting to work on the draft ordinance that would come before us, where we would work out those details. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Questions from the board?
And my question was just along the lines, you know, staff fund commitment to this, and those are feedbacks here.
Supervisor Ogre?
Are there any restrictions that you can think of about location throughout the county?
Yes, and within the legislation, it's designed to be outside of urban areas, which is, you know, state of California, right? So it would be something that for our preview, we can design basically that. So it's, I think the most problematic zoning that we have is rural residential, right? It ranges from 2.5 acres up to 160 acres, essentially. And you know, what would the board be comfortable with as far as an acreage minimum to put in the establishment there, like 10 acres, 20 acres, 40 acres? And that's your homework assignment there, if I may, just to give us an idea of what the board's comfortable with. So what you have is a copy, a draft copy of the actual legislation, and I have in comments and red, basically, some areas to address and think about.
So you put the balance way up?
No, this time.
So I'm okay with you going ahead if you have that time. If that's available to you, fine. If it doesn't pass or if it looks like it's going to fail, then obviously, I guess, you drop it. But I still think we have some issues that we have to work out anyway with regard to some of that this brings up. So I guess you could still be working on that potentially with regard to what this addresses as well, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
We could basically use this as a template, okay. Essentially.
Okay.
I don't want to stress out of an opportunity.
Yeah. So I think we've got four nodding heads. Go ahead. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Yeah, it won't be expedient, but we will put it in the queue.
Okay. Yep. Right. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Item. Item seven. Now, I want to check. We're not ready for
a couple more minutes.
Okay. Let's go to item 7F, County Council.
So this item is an application for permission to present a late claim filed by Northland Insurance on behalf of its insured Shad Trucking. When a person misses the claims filing deadline, the statutory 6-month deadline, the government code provides that a request to the board may be made for permission to file a late claim. This particular claim arises from an auto collision that happened July 12th, 2023, and the claim that was submitted was rejected as untimely. There's attached correspondence in which Northland Insurance confirmed with our third-party claims administrator, George Hills, that the downtime claim that they filed late was not covered by Northland, nor was it being pursued by Northland, and Shad Trucking did not file its own claim within the 6-month statutory period. George Hills, our third-party claims administrator, recommends denial of the application. The proposed claim has not been attached to the application, notably, and the application does not expressly identify one of the reasons for filing the late claim under Government Code Section 946.6. So the board has the option to either deny the application to present the late claim, approve the application for presenting the late claim, and then it will be processed by George Hills, or take no action, and your failure to act will result in denial of the application by operation of law.
Okay. Any questions? If not, looking for action.
Well, I think for me, it's just, I don't want to open a door to every one of these is probably different, but if you open the door to allow a claim that's passed, then you set yourself up for the future. So I can't support it at this time.
Okay. So at this point, there may be no action which gets to the same place. Is that correct?
Yes, if the board takes no action, then after 45 days by operation of law, it will be considered denied.
Okay. And if we deny the application, does that expedite that?
Mm-hmm. Then it would be considered denied today, and our third-party claims administrator would send out notice.
Okay.
What's the preferred route?
I think
just to not do
it. It's at your discretion.
I'm leaning towards just denying it right out and get it over with.
Yeah.
So I would make that motion.
I'll second it.
Supervisor Valenzuela?
Yep.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Cobbs?
Aye. 7G, County Council.
This item is continued from the last board meeting. Again, this is an application to file a late claim presented by a law firm on behalf of Valerie Manners.
The underlying claim arises from an auto accident that occurred on September 19th, 2023 in or about Yuba City, California. Previously, we had continued this matter with the understanding that law enforcement would be able to alter a traffic collision report that identified Siskiyou County as the leased owner of the vehicle that was involved in the auto accident. I understand from staff that law enforcement will not be able to make that alteration. The underlying reason for the lateness of the claim is the late issuance of the traffic collision report in April. The most often used statutory basis for granting that application to file a late claim is that it was not timely filed due to mistake, inadvertent surprise, or excusable neglect. In this case, after consulting with our third-party claims administrator, a recommendation would be to accept the claim, as it's likely that the late issuance of the report would be excusable neglect. That does not mean that you are approving or denying the underlying claim. It's just would just mean that you are finding excusable neglect for the lateness of the application.
And that's what George Hills is indicating, is that correct?
Yes.
Question.
Chris?
You probably have on the agenda worksheet, it said that he said denial.
Yes. So in our first discussion on this, that was the recommendation. Since we have been unable to alter the traffic report, the recommendation has changed. You can still deny it. If you do deny it, then the law firm would have the opportunity to petition the Superior Court to establish that there was excusable neglect. We would get outside counsel to defend, and then the court would make the decision.
No, I just rectifying that for the record. If that's his recommendation, then I would make that motion.
Yeah, I have a motion.
Yeah.
What was that again? To deny?
No, to accept.
To accept.
To accept.
The late.
Good thing if I can add that stuff to this.
Yeah, to accept the late claim application.
Yes.
Thank you. And do we have a second?
A second.
Thank you.
And just, the main holdup on this was the traffic report.
Correct.
Okay.
Our third-party claims administrator is still working with Yuba County, who it appears actually was in possession of the vehicle, and it was their staff that was involved in the accident. So we will be working on ironing that out.
Okay.
Ready for the vote?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Sure.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye. 7H, County Council?
7H is another application that is associated with the same auto collision and was filed late on the same basis as 7G. And the recommendation revised would be the same, to accept the late claim based on excusable neglect.
So moved to accept.
Thank you.
Second.
All righty. Supervisor Valenzuela?
Okay.
Supervisor Chris?
Aye.
Supervisor Ogren?
Aye.
And Supervisor Kopsa?
Aye. So we're going to get ready to go into, I think, 6 D and E. We're going to take a quick break here in a minute, but I want to, for clarification, does any of that?
What? 7 D and E.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Yeah, 7 D and E. What I want to clarify is, are we going to be opening the Water Conservation District simultaneously for any of this, or is that in 8, in that, is that going to be separate from 7?
Separate.
Okay, that's what I need to know. We're going to take a 5-minute break.
Okay.